Take it away, Derek. What's your question?
Why do you guys talk about comics so much?
Comic books.
Motherfucker, do you
read them?
18 years. Toothbrush is still fresh.
Did they have sex? Because, I mean, She-Hulk, you know.
Damn it, Tony. We went an entire episode without mentioning Maggot, and then you ruined it.
Comic books.
Motherfucker, do you
read them?
Batman's got his little fishbowl on his head, but Superman doesn't.
Cyclops was right.
Except when he was wrong.
Master Bruce, you are calm.
I'm going to silently judge all of you.
Shut up, Beast. Shut up.
Like, I've read it so many times, you know, it pretty much just crumbled in my hands.
Come on, old chum.
Comic books.
Motherfucker, do you
read them?
See, I didn't hate Hellcat until you made me read this miniseries. It was just a joke, but you made it real, Justin.
No.
You made it real.
I prefer my Dazzler singing, like, Creedence Clearwater Revival songs at Australian bars.
Titty discs. And
that's what to be known as from now on. Like, I'm going to go into the Marvel Wikipedia and edit that, whatever it is.
The worst titty discs.
Doesn't get better than that.
Comic books.
Motherfucker, do you
read them?
Hey, guys! Welcome back to a galaxy far, far away in a time long, long ago on Fanholes Comics, motherfucker. Do you read 'em? Hey, what's up, guys? This is Derek, Derek WC. I'm going to be one of your galactic hosts tonight. And I am joined by two, count 'em, two Carillion space cruiser pilot freighter guys. And one of them is a very special guest. So why don't you guys give a shout out and let everybody know who's here tonight.
Hey guys, this is Tony, and walks over to the pile, drops body on flaming pyre.
Hey guys, this is John, and you know, I think I'm going to start a porg ranch.
So, as you can hear, we are graced by the presence of John.
Only if you call
tonight.
It hardcore porg.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
We are graced to have the presence of John tonight. He has graced us with his presence on another Marvel Comics themed Star Wars podcast once again. And kind of like our last one, we're back in the saddle again. This is going to be an unofficial tie-in to the Han Solo or Solo Gag Me a Star Wars Story film that is premiering sometime when this is going to be released. You know, I don't know. Did you want, because I know Tony was saying we should talk about that trailer because at least we've seen that while we're recording this. Like, do you guys want to, like, break the ice by discussing that and telling people if we're actually going to see Han Solo a Star Wars Story or not?
I mean, I don't mind. I mean, I will fully say that I probably will see it, but I saw The Last Jedi in theaters, probably not going to see Solo in theaters.
See, I kind of think, like, I'm not going to, yeah, I kind of think I'm going to Rogue One this, which means I did not see Rogue One in theaters and just waited till it came out on Blu-ray and then I watched it. So I kind of feel like that's what I'm going to do with this, but... Well, what about you, John? Are you going to interrupt the streak of seeing Star Wars movies in the theater so you have to go see it? Or
yeah, because I've seen every one
in the
during
theater.
Its first run. Okay. Yeah, in the theater. Okay. So
see, I can understand that. Like, I already broke the streak. I decided not to go to Rogue One. So, but again, I guess, you know, I don't know. Did I? I did not see that Clone Wars abomination. Like, I know the series is good and everything, but I think everybody agrees that first, like, three-part pilot for that Clone Wars TV show is pretty atrocious. Like, and I did not see that in the theater either. So I probably broke my streak a long time ago without even thinking about it. But I don't know.
I totally forgot that even came out in theater. So yeah. As far as the trailer itself, they're still going to have to sell me on the kid playing Han. It mainly because they didn't show him a lot. He just had a couple of lines. You know, like, I'm going to be the best pilot in the galaxy. It looks interesting. I forgot who's playing Lando. Who's playing Lando?
Oh,
that dude.
Michael B. Jordan?
That guy who wanted to be Spider-Man.
Please welcome Donald Glover.
Oh, not Michael B. Jordan then.
No.
Okay. He has a good look, though. He looks like he's going to have that haunt, that Lando swagger. So I'm kind of hoping he's cool. I don't know if the girl is like a Han Solo love interest or she's just, you know, a girl.
That's what I was like. So. I was like, what's Mother of Dragons doing in this movie?
She's got to die in that.
Yeah.
I hate to say that.
Yeah.
She's almost got to die in that movie.
right? Yeah.
It's Donald Glover. I don't know why we couldn't
Donald
think of
Glover.
His name.
There you go. There you go.
So, yeah.
Well, I guess like
the dad from
the
Back
other...
to the Future.
Whenever I hear Glover, I always think of not Danny Glover, which I should,
that would be kind of funny if Crispin Glover was Lando, where he's just like, "Yeah, man, get your damn hands off the Falcon, man."
But runs his hand through his hair. I guess the other hot spot that a lot of fans have been bitching about or don't care is the Millennium Falcon doesn't look how we're used to it. It's new, which is fine, but also there's parts that were not on the original Falcon. Like, do you guys have any opinion on like the not new and improved, but the old and not as busted up Millennium Falcon?
I like the idea. Personally.
You like it?
I do. Cool. Yeah. Yeah. I like the idea. I think it's all nice inside, you know?
It's nice and shiny before Chewie, like, you know, lifted now, his leg all over it and all that stuff.
Are we 100% sure that's the Falcon?
I feel like that is the Falcon. That's got to be the Falcon.
Yeah, yeah. I think, like, because, like,
you,
one
you
of the
think,
lines...
You think it's just some other Kurilian freighter? Like, that seems kind of ridiculous that they would make a movie with some other... Because aren't all... I mean, I know this is going to sound stupid to say, but, like, aren't all the toys, like, this is the Falcon? It just happens to have,
extra...
It just has an extra, like, block between the two protrusions from the saucer section, for lack of a better term. Like, now it's just, like, one giant protrusion or whatever. You know, I don't know if I've ever talked about this on the podcasts proper before, but I think it's infamous now among the fan holes that I don't believe in the legend of the gold fuzzy dice, like that they were always there. Like, I think that's I think that's total BS, like that they just made up. So, like, and I know there are these like fuzzy screenshots online that like point to some minuscule speck in the back of Chewbacca's head where they're like, look, that's the fuzzy dice. And I'm like, are you guys kidding me? Like how so small, like it might as well be like a scratch on the film for all I can see. So I don't know. Where do you come down on the gold dice, John?
I swear I saw him. Okay. I swear, as a kid, I saw
me,
him.
Okay, me too. Okay. Me too. Okay.
I don't.
Me and Derek had a thing
that's
about
fine.
That.
That's fine if you don't have my back. I just don't believe it. Like I if you show me the dice, like somewhere, like where it's like
I'm,
you know,
thinking trading card maybe.
Trading card? Okay.
Yeah, maybe.
That's a good call. I didn't think about that. Yeah.
Okay. If you show me a trading card, I'll renege. But I don't. I still don't believe in the legend of the gold fuzzy dice. Like I think they were just made up for these new movies, but that's just me.
Well, the thing is I think it was just a background thing that was like kind of like fuzzy dice, but they really made too big of a deal of it in The Last Jedi. It was like, here's Han's dice, you know. It's like,
well, they're going to come up a little later in this episode.
Yeah, they will. They will. That's why I brought it up. That's exactly why I brought it up.
As far as Solo story, a Han star, I don't know what you want to call it. I think it'll be fine. I'm one of those people that didn't have like a huge love for Rogue One, but it didn't piss me off. I just thought like the characters were, what's the best way to put it, intentionally made uninteresting so you wouldn't care when they died. But Han Solo, they're going to have to make him somewhat interesting. He's one of the most charismatic characters in the franchise, so yeah, I'm interested. Yeah,
but how do you keep the tension then? Because you know nothing happens to Chewie, you don't know nothing's going to happen to Han, you know nothing's going to happen to Lando,
which is why he said like the girl has to die. Yeah,
I was like, hopefully I'll be in love with Woody Harrelson's character in Mother of Dragons, so I'll be really sad when they die.
Woody Harrelson's going to be looking for Twinkies.
But yeah, I mean, I'll watch it. You know, I mean, I expect the same thing. I think it'll be great eye candy and I'll be like, oh, that was like a really pretty movie. And, oh, you know, like the red letter media trope, you know, they'll show something nostalgic and I'll be like, ATSD, ATSD. Yeah, you know.
Rogue One's probably my number two Star Wars movie now.
Oh, okay.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, two or three, somewhere in there, depending on the day.
Nice. Except I didn't hate it, but you know, like I'm you can ask Derek. Of probably all the fan holes, I'm probably the biggest softy for Star Wars. I tend to give it a lot of passes. The rest of the guys don't, so that's just me.
I give certain things passes, you know, like and I give really like crazy things passes. Like I'll give stuff like the Ewok Adventures and the Caravan of Courage passes, but like I'm the guy who's like, Rogue One, no. Like, I don't give you a pass. You know, so I'm like that guy. But that's okay. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's like everybody's got their hierarchy and stuff they enjoy. So like there's no skin off anybody's back. Everybody, hopefully there are people in the theater right now as they're listening to this, and they're going to enjoy Han Solo, A Star Wars Story.
You're after something. Is it revenge? Money? Or is it something else? You look good. A little rough around the edges, but good.
Heard about a job. Big shot gangster putting together crew.
I'm a driver. And I'm a flyer. I waited a long time for a shot like this.
What do you think? Well, what do you know?
You got a line on a ship?
Yeah, I know a guy. He's the best smuggler around.
I heard a story about you. I was wondering if it's true.
Everything you've heard about me is true.
L3!
Let's go with the mean man's face.
Hey, with these guns.
If you come with us, you're in this life for good.
You might wanna buckle up, baby.
Here they come! Let me give you some advice. We assume everyone will betray you, and you will never be disappointed.
I got a really good feeling about this.
Since when do you know how to fly?
190 years old? You look great.
Push it.
So glad we took this job.
So yeah, and then I guess what we'll do is I think we're gonna, like we said, talk about three Marvel Star Wars comics in celebration. And so we all kind of picked various comics and everything, and as we are apt to do, we like to go in chronological order. And of course, that makes our pal John our guest of this episode. That puts him in the hot seat. So John, you are up first, and why don't you tell everybody who's listening what Marvel Star Wars comic you brought?
Well, I picked number 32, February, got to be like 78 or something, right? No, probably a little later than that.
79 is the on sale date.
Sorry. 40 cents for the cover, because I actually have the issue here in my hand, and this is the Jawa Express, and it's got a big sandcrawler on the cover, and it's a Carmine Infantino art with Bob Wyack?
I think it's Wyack? I think it's Wyasek. I think that's how you say it.
I was wrong too.
I'd go with that.
I listened to a pronunciation guide like 3 weeks ago, so I think that's how you say it.
So this is very Power of the Force 2 looking characters on the cover, if I do say so. You've got the kind of bulky Luke and Han and Chewie's looking, you know,
like Sasquatchy.
Yeah. Yeah, and a couple of Jawas and a giant sandcrawler. And I can tell you, I probably bought this because of the sandcrawler. So I had a thing for Jawas as a kid. I really loved them. So probably go through a little summary here. What do you think, guys? You guys okay with that?
Yeah, sounds
okay.
Good to go with me.
All right. Well, starting off, it starts off with the big Jawa Express title, and then it says Dawn on the Dune Sea, because we always hear about the Dune Sea. And I love the way this starts, because I haven't read the issue before it, but it starts with a land speeder that looks almost like Luke's buried in the sand, and Han and Luke are trying to fix it, and Chewie's sitting on the front, and the droids are there. So they had like all five of them on this land speeder that's almost Kennerized in a way, the way it's kind of distorted. But you can just tell from this first page, this is what's happening. You know, they're stuck. So they move on, and they are trying to repair the land speeder. The droids figure out, hey, we need coolant. You can drain us, and we will have coolant. So we will put us out of commission, and they get rolling again, and they go to find Luke's ship, and that's when the Jawas come in, and they're taking Luke's ship apart. and they've pretty much got it stripped down to the bare bones. After that point, Luke and Han say, hey, we'll just catch a ride with the Jawas, and they get in Sandcrawler, and they're rolling along and get stopped by some Imperial troops with a Dewback, because, you know, we all remember the Dewbacks, and we had to see those. But they're trying to get the Mos Eisley, and it's going to take 3 months, so, you know, it is what it is. They have a little firefight with the troopers, and they blow them off the ridge, and they now have to go the long way around, which doesn't help anybody. In doing so, they come upon a disabled Sandcrawler out in the middle of the desert and a moisture evaporator, and they go running over there, and Luke's feeling this evaporator, and he says, okay, everybody run. They go run and hide, and they come back over the ridge, and the whole desert is frozen. Hang on. Turning pages here. And this appears to be some kind of new weapon, and it looks like Captain Cold from The Flash is maybe operating this.
It's
those are some sick glasses.
It's good old Baron Tag.
Yeah, and he's actually got an Imperial troop transport, and he's out there, and they're developing this weapon. If they can freeze the desert, then they can freeze, you know, anything. So they've done this, but Luke and Han have now saved the Jawas, and they're going to try and get away in the Sandcrawler. The troop transport realizes who they are and goes after them, but the Jawas make them swerve, and they just keep on moving along on the Jawa Express in that Sandcrawler. And I love they have a couple of pages of the Jawas when they're talking, and it's that Jawa, weird Jawa script.
Yeah, little squiggles.
Yeah. So the troop transports keep coming after them, and they throw a bunch of fuel out, make it explode. The troop transports get caught up in the explosion, kind of swerve off course, and they keep going. And all of a sudden, the disabled 3PO is there talking to Luke, and he goes, hey, the Jawas had coolant too, and they started us back up. But if they have coolant for us, they have coolant for the land speeder. And so the Jawas help them out, fill them up with coolant, and away they go off to Mos Eisley, and that's the issue.
Cool. I will say, first off, like, I hadn't read this issue before, but I am very familiar with a lot of Marvel characters and stuff. It is kind of cool seeing Baron Ormond Tag in here. He's usually considered one of the more high-profile kind of Marvel characters, and he does have silly eyewear, I'm not going to lie. But yeah, no, that was just kind of cool. I didn't expect to see him pop up, and it was like, hey, look, there's Tag. Hey, you know.
They kind of. I'm trying to think of the right word. They kind of give him cred by way of having his backstory directly tied into Darth Vader, because the idea is Vader's the one who blinded him, so that's why he has to have like the Geordi eye gear or whatever and stuff like that. So it's like I guess it lends some credibility, I guess, to his character, whereas, you know, sometimes if you just have a random, you know, newly invented character, you know, for say Luke and Han to serve as their antagonist, you know, it may just be like, you know, if you're sort of strictly a loyalist to, say, you know, the canon of the original trilogy, you might be like, you know, who the fuck is this Baron Tag guy? Like, why is he so important? But if you read into it, you know, you learn like he's like one of these guys like Shizor, where, you know, he's vying for, you know, a seat at the table with the Emperor. He's challenged Lord Vader and failed, you know, like those kind of things. So it's like it's an interesting notion, because, you know, I think just because his backstory ties into Darth Vader, you might be more likely to put him higher up on the echelon than somebody like Shizor, you know? Because you might be like, well, who the fuck is Shizor? Like, what the fuck is Black Sun? Like, you just made all that shit up. Like, that's not cool. That's not real, you know, or whatever. But, like, I'm not saying it is or isn't, but that might be somebody's attitude. Whereas if you say, like, oh, and by the way, you know, Baron Tag, you see those funky eye goggles? Like, it's like, that's because Darth Vader blinded him. And you're like, ooh, cool Darth Vader, you know. So
I, as a kid, I really did have him confused with Captain Cold for a while.
It's funny, when he takes off his, and this is not a compliment, but when he takes off his Captain Cold outfit, like, he kind of reminds me of like Dr. Druid a little bit, and I'm like, oh, no wonder.
Oh, yeah, I could
I'm
see
like
that.
I'm like, no wonder you got pwned by Darth Vader. you're the Dr. Druid of Star Wars.
Yeah, he has red pajamas and a blue cape. Yeah.
yeah, definitely.
The Jawas seem like kind of bigger in some panels in the art. Is like, I don't know if it's perspective, but they seem like they're like, you know, not, you know, I don't know the PC term, little people.
As Luke and Han are.
Yeah, yeah, like they're not quite in scale. Yeah, yeah, I get it. You know what I was going to say was, and I don't know if this was by design either, we're talking about all these happy coincidences, but I noticed, like, when they reference, like, Han and Luke, they're talking to the Jawas and everything, and then they talk to one another, and basically, like, you know, Luke's concerned about giving 3PO and R2 up to the Jawas, and then Han's just basically like, Chewie and I stashed part of our bonus from Jabba the Hutt aboard the Millennium Falcon. We can use it to buy back the droids. And then there's this little asterisk where it's like, see Star Wars 28. And I'm like, is it by coincidence that that was read and discussed on our last podcast?
Totally.
Yes.
There's totally. A theme. Yeah. There's a thing going on here.
Yeah, yeah. We're following up on stuff. Yeah. And then I guess totally
by design.
Yeah, yeah. And then I think something that John brings up too is interesting. It's like you've got sandcrawlers and Jawas and Dewbacks and the sand troopers, and then Baron Tagg's got his little Imperial troop transports. I mean, this is even though this is kind of this predates, like, Larry Hama doing G.I. Joe. I feel like you could have gotten away with making one of those animated comic book commercials that would later serve as, like, animation for, like, a toy commercial. Yeah. Because it's like, you got the troop transport from Kenner. You know, you got the Dewbacks, you know, and you got the Jawas and the little...
You got the
maybe they could sell that, you know, that one Sandcrawler playset where it was like not really the sand crawler, it was just like a paper, what was it, like a cardboard cutout?
Yeah, it had like a cardboard
like a backdrop.
Yeah,
they like, did have a remote one.
Did they have
too.
I was gonna say they had a RC sand crawler.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So like remote control one and stuff. Yeah, okay. So like,
well,
like, yeah.
But, 79 remote control. Well, keep it in perspective.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it was one of those like little clicker things, like you click up and it goes forward, you click back and it goes backward.
yeah But like, it definitely seemed like that could be one of those kind of G.I. Joe, like, toy commercials in disguise.
Now you say that, I can see that. I absolutely love the troop transport. That's one of my favorite vintage toys, and I had one as a kid, so.
Did you like its frequent use in Rebels?
That's what I was about to say. I was like, I feel like the Red Letter Media guys where I was like, I saw the Imperial troop transport in Rebels. I clapped when I saw the Imperial troop transport.
I haven't watched Rebels yet, so.
Oh, okay. Spoilers! The Imperial troop transport is in Rebels.
I do that, though.
Yeah,
it's featured pretty heavily. This is kind of a cool thing, too, because Marvel, by this point, in the movies, we were doing we're at a place, we're not at that place anymore. Like, we start off with Tatooine, and as far as we're considered until Return of the Jedi, Tatooine's not a thing anymore. Luke Lee, he even says, I'm never coming back to this planet anyway, screw this. So it's kind of nice that in these Marvel comics, we go back to these locations and stuff, and that's kind of like a neat little thing. It's like, oh yeah, we didn't forget that like Luke came from, well, he wasn't born there. He was born on some fucking asteroid somewhere. He was raised on Tatooine, and it's kind of cool to see him and Han banter back and forth, you know. Han's like, he's not so much the world traveled guy to Luke on his own home turf. He's like, you know, those twin sons, they'll like bake us before we can get anywhere if we stay around to them. Luke is like, yeah, Han, I know, I lived here.
I love that it's a Luke and Han issue because there's not a lot of them where they're together before Empire. You know, between Star Wars and Empire, there's not a lot of issues where they're actually in the same issue. You know, it's either a Luke story or a Han story, or maybe they have two storylines, but where they're actually kind of together, working together as a team. That's kind of cool. That's the other reason I really like this issue.
They definitely have that feeling from the first Star Wars movie where, you know, Luke still does look up to Han and everything, but they have that friendship. You know, this is something that you would actually kind of cite, you know, like, in The Last Jedi, you know, like if Mark Hamill said like, oh man, remember the time we had to ride on that sand crawler for like almost a day, you know, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. I love the story because of that too, because as a kid, you know, you're looking and you're seeing, oh, the troop transport. And all of a sudden your mind is like, okay, if I take my action figures, I can recreate this.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
And you couldn't always do that with the movie stuff, but it kind of gave you another direction to take, you know, all your action figures in. So I love that about this too. And it's a self-contained story, just like, you know, all of these are for the most part.
Well, even what you're saying before, like that sequence of the broken down land speeder, like you could see yourself, like I could see myself like going out into like, you know, playing on the beach or something and like trying to half bury the land speeder and then, you know, putting all these action figures next to it, like they're trying to repair it. And that would be, you know, part of your play cycle and everything. But I think the fact that it is on Tatooine and it's on the Dune Sea and you go down this checklist of everything that's there, all these quote unquote, you know, basically Kenner toys that they're selling you. It's like in some ways that helps with, to me, also the legitimacy of the world that you're in, like it's not just
world building. Yeah.
Well, you know, it's not necessarily that they built this world, but the world was already pre-built, and they're exploring it, and expanding on it even more. So it's like it's cool to see something set in an arena that you know from Star Wars, and I guess, you know, at some point later Return of the Jedi, but mainly from at this point in time, you know, this, you would only know this from A New Hope, right? And so you're, you know, it seems like a legitimate Star Wars story where I'm like, you know, and I know in some cases, like, people are like, oh, you know, they want to see new things and original things. But sometimes I'm kind of like, oh, look, they kind of went down the checklist. It's like Tatooine, you know, Twin Suns, check. Dune Sea, check. Landspeeder, check. Dubax, check. Jawas, check. Sandcrawler, check. Sand Troopers, check. You know, and I'm just kind of like, moisture evaporators, check. And then the main crux of it is, I mean, it works well because his tag's weapon, you know, like, reverses what you know. You know that Tatooine is a hot planet. It's got twin suns. It's a desert. And then when he uses it, then it's like, oh, look, you know, he froze, like, this entire plane and the sand crawler and everything that you're familiar with. It turns everything on its head. So at least it's a good setting to display, you know, the quote-unquote, you know, awesome might and power of the Omega Frost.
Yeah, because, like, Tatooine, like, its main thing is it's really fucking hot. Yeah, it's like, you know.
So it's you're like, how powerful does this weapon have to be if it can freeze something on, you know, one of the hottest planets in the galaxy? You know?
I mean, if they were on Yavin, would the guy up in the tower be going, somebody's got a moisture evaporator about 2 miles in that direction, and there's another group putting over one over there. Huh. That's strange.
what's going on? What's going on, buddy? There was a kind of a throwaway reference, Easter egg, that I liked too, when the good guys pretty much take out the stormtroopers in the early part of it. There's a big crater and stuff, and they have to go around, and they're like, oh, we're going to go through the Jundlin wastes. And Han's like, yeah, the Jawa seemed kind of weird about that. And Luke's like, well, I think I have a good idea why, but he doesn't say why. I'm thinking, John, I guess you would agree, Derek too, obviously. I was thinking crate dragons.
Yeah. Sand people too, probably, right?
Yeah, that's, well, I think Obi-Wan.
I think Luke said it's not just sand people.
Hmm. Yeah.
Well, even, you know, Obi-Wan's, you know, the one who says, you know, the Jundlin wastes are not to be traveled lightly.
Yeah, it's got, if you watch the first movie, all the callbacks in this aren't beating you overhead. It's just, it's like you said, Derek, it's expanding on that story. You know, it's like, the Jawas are scared of the Jundlin wastes. Yeah.
I mean, the world building's done, and now they're inhabiting that world building, you know, and so that's really cool because they're taking full advantage and exploiting, like, all the world building that's been done for them to the fullest in this story.
The cool thing about that, though, is when you drop Tag into it, he doesn't seem out of place. You know,
no.
he's not so new that he's like, oh, right, this is right. New, you know?
Well, that's part of my comment on his character, that, you know, he's got the street cred because he's not quite Xizor. Like, I don't mean to rag on Xizor, but I'm just thinking of other expanded universe characters.
Like, geez, Derek, what is Xizor
do
to you?
Yeah, I know. I guess I could think of somebody else, but nobody's immediately coming to mind, you know? So
no, you're
like,
fine. Yeah.
I was just kind of like, oh, like, who's another, like, sort of bad guy vying for the Emperor's attention or whatever. But, you know, you could point to, like, some of the guys in the recent, you know, in some of the recent Darth Vader comics where it's like they're not exactly, you know, they don't necessarily have all the same cred, you know, but it's like some characters, you know, make their bones with you and stand out and others don't. And I think I agree with John. I mean, I think, you know, I think Baron Tagg definitely made his bones, you know, and it's probably a testament to that character because he's one of the few characters from the Marvel Comics canon that, you know, I know now, probably now that Marvel is publishing Star Wars comics again, this series is not so much, what's the right word? I don't want to say ignored, but I think this series was kind of viewed as not
glossed over.
Well, not yeah. like not it, for a while. It felt like it was in this place where Lucasfilm didn't consider it official. Whereas now, like to me, we talked about this, I think, on the last podcast. But to me, I kind of feel like now with the sort of the disillusion of the expanded universe canon, now I'm like, well, now these Star Wars Marvel comics seem more legitimate than ever, you know, because they could have probably conceivably happened, you know, as opposed to like a lot of stuff where it's like, you know, it's dealing with, you know, children and alternate timelines or what, you know, whatever you want to attribute to.
Yeah,
you know,
a lot of Dark Horse stuff is considered, null and void now.
Yeah, now it's kind of apocryphal in the post-Disney canon, whereas I don't think this necessarily is. And I guess what I was going to get at was, you know, Baron Tagg's one of the few characters who, even back in that sort of malaise of, well, I don't know if this Marvel Star Wars stuff is necessarily considered canon by Lucasfilm, he managed to get into other expanded universe material. So it's like, you're like, oh, well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah, like Tagco is like a big, like, yeah, provider for weapons and stuff, yeah.
Maybe he's Snoke.
He doesn't have funky eyeglasses, though.
Well, he's got a scar, so, you know. Maybe it's surgery. I don't know.
He had LASIK, really bad LASIK.
I think Snoke planted the fuzzy dice in the Falcon. That's what I think.
It's possible. I can see it.
You know, I don't know if we're wrapping up on this particular issue, but one person I want to give a bunch of praise to is Wiasek, like Bob Wiasek, the inker. Because, you know, I was noticing, and it's like, you know, some people don't, I don't know how to put this politely, but Carmen Infantino is like a renowned artist, but there's certain points in his career where, you know, you point to, you know, the Flash and early things where he definitely put his stamp on comic book history. And then you come to issues like this where people have a lot of fond memories of these Star Wars comics. So there's a lot of fondness for the art and everything that's involved in those comics. And then you look to, like, you know, not to kind of deride the work or anything, but you look to, like, some of the issues of, like, say, I don't know, like Trial of the Flash, where it lasted like forever, and by that end of the run, like, it's not quite, I guess to me it's like I don't look at it and go, gee, this is like the best his art could be. Whereas I think with this, like, I feel like Wiasek, like, really enhances a lot of work that I've read, and I think I never really realized it. Like, I feel like it's unconscious. And when I was looking at all the stuff he worked on, I'm like, look, he worked on Marvel Star Wars, you know, when Carmen Infantino was penciling it. He worked on X Factor when Walt Simonson was doing it. He worked on like Power Pack, I think, when John Bogdanov was drawing it. He worked on like Silver Surfer when I want to say it was Marshall Rogers was doing it. He worked on like Uncanny X-Men and Superboy. So like, I'm thinking like all these comics that I read, and I'm just like, man, like he really, you know, like I'm starting to wonder now if he's a consistent factor in a lot of the art that I enjoyed as a kid. And I think he is.
He's like one of those guys that like kind of for the 80s gave Marvel that look, I guess you would say.
Yeah. I feel like he definitely adds to their, you know, I don't want to say in a negative way, but to their glorious house style, you know, like where you're like, oh, this is,
yeah,
this is very cool. Like he's got a distinct line and he, I mean, to put it this way, like the Carmen Infantino Wiasek art in this is way better and more engaging to me and has a very cool aesthetic to it than say those issues of Trial of the Flash that I was talking about where I'm just kind of like,
right,
you know, it's like it's not bad, but you know, it doesn't exactly wow me, you know. And so like that's kind of something that I noticed where I was just kind of like, I think Bob Wiasek is like an unsung hero in a lot of these Marvel comics.
Do you think they gave him the time and the prestige to do this because it was Star Wars at the time and it was hot?
I don't know. Like
you know,
sometimes I wonder because sometimes I feel like there's this attitude.
Or it could have been they could have been pumping out Star Wars comics, and Wiasek was just such a pro. He made that look good.
Yeah, I don't know. Like sometimes I wonder about like licensed material, like because you start to wonder like. Star Wars was popular, but I don't really know what the sales figures on, say, a Star Wars comic was compared to, say, like, I'm assuming because, you know, this is the stories we were always told, but, you know, X-Men was always, I mean, especially in this day, you know, the day and age we're talking about and when we were growing up reading comics, like, X-Men was always the number one book. So you're, like, sitting there going, well, a Claremont Byrne issue of X-Men probably outsold Star Wars, I'm guessing, but I could be wrong about that, but I'm thinking that's true, you know, like, so I'm wondering if, you know, because I think not only like Star Wars, and maybe this is an unfair comparison, but like, I'm thinking about like stuff like when they had licensed properties that went to like Star Comics, like, I bet you people weren't like fighting over the Star Comics penciling jobs. Like nobody was like, oh man, you know, I want that Aerators gig or I want that Muppet Babies gig or whatever. Like, I don't know that necessarily was raking. It's like, to me, it seemed like, you know, guys like Jim Lee who were trying to make their bones. It's like, yeah, they made their bones doing Punisher and stuff like that. But then they graduated to, it's like the end goal was like, I want to work on X-Men and make the big time money, you know, like, and yeah. So like that always seemed to be the major goal. And sometimes I wonder if I know now in retrospect, like, you know, we're sitting back looking at the Star Wars comics and kind of going, oh, these were so great. And we love Star Wars. And, you know, now these are collectibles and, you know, worth a bunch of money or, you know, I don't know, relatively, but you know, that's neither here nor there, but they are
on them fondly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They're well regarded and, but did they necessarily make, I'm not saying they didn't make any money. I'm sure they sold way more than comics do today, but in comparison to what was, you know, the top tier selling comic at the time, where maybe the top tier selling comic sold, you know, tens of millions, you know, maybe Star Wars sold, you know, 6 million or whatever it is.
I would go with a child's perspective. When I was a kid, like me and my friends, my group of friends, none of us really bought Spider-Man or X-Men or anything like that. That was kind of like a teenage phase where I got into the more serious, more kind of adult stories. Yeah. Everybody I knew was picking up Star Wars, G.I. Joe, and Transformers. Those were like always in my friend's house.
Yeah. No, that's true. These Star Wars, G.I. Joe, and Transformers were gateway comics for me for sure. I mean, it was that and, you know, the Spider-Man books and, you know.
You think about that. Mom in the grocery store, though, and she sees a comic and, you know, kids screaming, oh, here, you know, if she picks something up, I mean, if you got Rogue half naked on a cover of an X-Men or Star Wars and she knows the Star Wars name, which one's she going to pick?
Right. You know? Yeah. Or your grandma, you know, your grandma's not going to know who like the Teen Titans are, but she's like, oh, there's that C.P. Arthurio guy from the Star Wars, you know? Yeah. She's going to pick that up.
I don't know, guys. Like Luke shows an awful lot of skin in these early issues. And Leia's showing an awful lot of leg, you know, in these early issues. I don't know. Mom might have the same problems with that. I don't know. You get them sexy Zeltron girls showing all their red skin, you know.
So. I'm talking Danny. Back in the 79. So back then, yeah, we didn't have them yet.
The most sexually attractive things was Jax the Rocket Rabbit.
You leave Jax alone. I told you
Jackson
that last
is
time.
Awesome. I know.
I would buy a Jax figure.
That would be cool.
Yeah, I would. Jackson, cool. The Rocket Rabbit. Hey, hey, you know what? If it weren't for him, we'd have no Bucky O'Hare.
John, you have to fill me in. Is there, was Baron Tagg ever immortalized in Kenner plastic or Hasbro plastic?
I do not believe so. Not that I ever recall. Because okay. It would almost have to be one of those comic packs.
Yeah, it would have to be one of those comic packs, and he wasn't one of those guys, huh?
Not that I remember.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. That's a good segue, by the way.
Star Wars, give me those Star Wars, nothing but Star Wars, don't let them end. Star Wars, those here in Star Wars, talking about Star Wars on a podcast.
I'm Ryan Daly, and welcome to...
And I'm the Irredeemable Shag.
Dude, what are you doing?
What?
Give Me Those Star Wars is my show.
Well, you're part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network, so it's really our show.
But if you show up on the promo, people will think you're the co-host.
I'm not?
No, the show will have rotating guests.
You just took that idea from my Justice League International podcast.
You took that idea from my Secret Origins podcast.
And you took that idea from Dead Both and Spies.
That was my podcast.
Wait a minute. I sang the theme song with you.
So?
So, technically, I appear on every episode. I'm part of the foundation of this new Star Wars show.
That's true.
So, you want to take this from the top, or what?
I'm Ryan Daly. Join me and a galaxy of guest stars on Give Me Those... including the Irredeemable Shag, whose voice you will technically hear on every episode, on Give Me Those Star Wars...
The official Star Wars show of the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
Available on iTunes and Stitcher and at fireandwaterpodcast.com. Yeah.
All right, so let's move on to the next comic that Sir Tony has brought for us this evening. And we're jumping way ahead here, but what comic did you bring, Tony?
This is kind of funny because mine was actually bought in a comic two-pack. I'll divulge that later. Mine is Jawas of Doom. That is issue 81 of the original Marvel run. The inflation has hit. It's a 60-cent cover price. This says March. I want to say it's 85 or so because it's after Return of the Jedi.
It's actually, the cover date's March 84, and then the onset date is December 83.
Okay, but yeah, this does take place after Return of the Jedi. This was written by Joe Duffy, who became a very, very highly regarded Star Wars writer. It's penciled by Ron Frenz, who's a legend in the comic industry, a really great artist. It's inked by Tom Palmer. Not only that, the issue I have is a reproduction copy, so I didn't get this, unfortunately, but the original cover is... It almost Drew Struzan quality Tom Palmer painting cover.
Yeah, I was going to say, this comic, I didn't tell you guys this before the show. I wanted to save it. This is my favorite issue out of all of them.
Oh, wow.
Honestly.
Cool.
It actually brought me back into comics. I had quit reading for a while, and this is like the comic that got me back into Star Wars comics. I saw it on a spinner rack in a Woolworths, and that cover was like, oh, crap. You know, that's cool. I want to read that story. And I picked it up, and that drew me back into Star Wars comics. And I read from there to the end, originally.
Nice.
So then picked up some other ones. So.
Cool. Yeah. This cover, if you're a Star Wars fan, if you're a movie fan, it's a movie-quality image. I would buy that as a poster. It's just really, really just pretty. This was also colored by Linus Wein. And where we are with this is Han and Leia and R2 are the main focus of this. Han's having a bad time after the Battle of Endor. Like I said, this is actually also one of the first issues to take place after the movie series. So this is kind of free reign, in a way, for Marvel to do their own thing and actually not have any mandates by Lucasfilm. They can kind of do what they want as long as it's nothing too ridiculous. They can't kill Luke or anything, but they have a little bit of the reins loosened on them. Han's kind of mad, though, because he's out of money again. It's kind of an ongoing thing with poor Han. He never has the cash when he needs it. Leia, being at this point definitely his girlfriend, quote-unquote, even tries to say that, like, you know, the House of Alderaan would loan him credits, or, you know, the Rebel Alliance would give him an advance. And he that just really... prickles his skin because he's used to being on his own, independent, and he's like just really pissed off. He even gets down on himself, and he's just like, you know, this isn't how Han Solo should be, you know. So they kind of go, hey, you know what? Han's like, you know what? I want to get myself together. Him and Leia and R2 take off to Tatooine because he's like, you know what? I got a bank account on Mos Eisley. I'll get the money out of there. I'm good. I'm Han Solo, man. I'm Han Solo. I'm Han Solo. So they get to Mos Eisley, and this is kind of funny. They go to the bank, and his account's frozen, and it's because Han was frozen. Which was kind of a cute little joke. He tries to tell the computer it's not a real person. Hey, imagine that. They kind of called that 30 years before. Talking to a non-real human doesn't get anywhere because as far as they're concerned, he's not a real entity. He is frozen in carbonite, and this just makes him mad again. So, you know, he storms off, and he's just like, whatever, I'll figure something out. However, during this, Boba Fett, remember that guy? He's not a very big character in Star Wars. I don't know if anybody remembers him. He has managed to get out of the Sarlacc pit, in which he stupidly fell into.
With a little screen.
Exactly. However, poor Boba is completely amnesiac. He has no memory, and he's just kind of wandering around. The Jawas roll up in a sandcrawler, which is kind of funny because my book not only has a title with Jawas in it, but like John's story, it actually does feature the Jawas pretty significantly. Pull up. Now, apparently they have no idea who the infamous bounty hunter is, and they think he's a robot. They think he's a droid. So they're like, hey, you know, fuck it. We're going to have to sell this guy for some big money. The interesting thing about this from John's story is John's Jawas are kind of like the old school movie ones. The Jawas now, after Jabba the Hutt got blowed up real good, are more aggressive, and it even says they're willing to attack sand people. And I'm like, damn, okay. Jawas got angry. They pretty much take Boba and start to head out to Mos Eisley. At this point, Leia, and no offense, Leia, you're really cool, and I respect you as a woman, but she's like, oh, we have R2-D2. She can talk to the bank computer. Yeah, duh. That's what he does. She goes back to kind of sweet talk Han and, like, you know, give him that good reassurance that, like, hey, we could do this. We got it. Bad thing is they left it in the hangar with this guy, Garrick. Garrick is too busy working on his damn land speeders to notice that the Jawas kind of snuck in and stole R2. Not so good. So now they're like, okay, we don't have R2. And hey, Garrick, since you suck, why don't you let us borrow your land speeders? He does so begrudgingly. He's not really a fan of Han that much. He's cordial with him, but he doesn't trust him. This is kind of a thing in Han's life. People who are acquaintances of his don't seem to trust him very much. But anyway, they take off, and they come up on the sandcrawler, and the Jawas are actually aggressive towards them, and it's like, holy crap. They're taking some hits and stuff, and Han jumps from the landspeeder into the sandcrawler and ends up in the cargo hold and trying to find R2 and Fett. However, Fett doesn't know who Han is. He's like, you know, speaking in stilted sentences, and, you know, he's like, huh? And Han manages to manipulate Fett into helping him, and Fett's even very helpful, you know, even, like, you know, helping him get out of the hole they're in so Han can escape. But things don't always happen the best for poor Han. Fett has his memory jogged. Dang it! Because Leia says Han, and Fett's like, Han? Han Solo? Yeah, da-da-da. He tries to get a couple shots off, but Han dodges, and the Sandcrawler's careening out of control. There is no help for that poor Sandcrawler and the Jawas. And the Sandcrawler goes almost right into the Sarlacc, and yeah, that's where Boba Fett ends up. And we kind of have our resolution of Fett getting out and then going back in, and Han having an adventure where he is feeling down on himself. And at the end, Leia and Han have this little moment where Han even kind of genuflects if Fett could have been saved and if he had actually tried his best. And Leia pretty much, you know, reassures him that Fett after he gained his memory back was the same guy who hated Han. So don't feel bad. You know, he was going to kill you. So this was kind of cool. It was very rollicking, fast paced kind of adventure. And kind of like John's story, there was a lot of callbacks to stuff that had happened before. What did you guys think about this issue?
Well, like I said, this is one of my favorite issues. I'm not a big fan of the theory that Boba Fett lived, but you know, this issue was pointed to for a long, long time as the fact that he was still alive, you know, after Jedi and before there was any, you know, canon evidence for it. This was the, hey, he really is still alive. The comic book said so.
Yeah, right. It happened. Simpsons did it. Yeah.
I remember this was something that, like, was kind of up there for me with issue 68, because it did deal with Boba Fett. So, of course, back then it was like, oh, Boba Fett had all this fan aura, and you were, like, all excited when Boba Fett showed up in a comic book and everything. And then I remember, again, you know, they pushed this idea that Boba Fett survived in the Dark Empire miniseries as well. And I remember people trying to rationalize, like, they were trying to you know, use all the available canon. So I remember reading these descriptions where they're like, and Boba Fett got out of the Sarlacc and fell back in again, and then got back out again. You know, like, where it was like, you know, they were trying to basically, like, make Dark Empire and this story from issue 81 both fit into the expanded canon. So, like, you're sitting there reading it, it's like, man, he fell into the Sarlacc and got back out, like, a lot of times, you know, like, in the span of all this expanded continuity. So I always thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah, it's like, he's out, he's in, he's out, he's in. Yeah. What'd you guys think about John Jawas, or definitely more movie accurate, but what do you think about the almost angry, aggressive Jawas in this story?
Well, I guess, you know, with somebody like Jabba taken out as one of the, it's like what they always say, you know, you can topple a dictator, but then, you know, then it's like that something new is going to arise out of the ashes of that removal from somebody from a seat of power. I mean, clearly, you know, Jabba kept certain things, you know, certain parties on a leash as far as the less savory elements of Tatooine were concerned, and with his absence, this is a post Return of the Jedi world. You know, it's like I guess to some degree it makes sense that the Jawas are going to change. I just thought it was weird that they mistook Boba Fett for a droid. Like I thought that was a strange. I mean, I guess that was a way to sort of get all the parties into the same place at the same time. It's like, oh, well, we'll have Boba Fett get out of the Sarlacc. They'll mistake him for a droid. He'll be on the Sandcrawler. And then the reason why Han and Leia show up is because they want R2-D2 back, and the Jawas have also abducted R2-D2, and that's how they'll, you know, well, these two parties will conflict, you know?
Do they think he's a droid or a cyborg?
Well, they kind of defeated
cyborg.
They kind of are non-committal about it. I mean, I guess since we don't know what Boba Fett's backstory is,
there's the purple Death Star droid who kind of says he's a cyborg, but that's after the Jawas
on the Sandcrawler. This is what he says exactly. He says, "Yes, I think that is a droid of some sort, ellipses, or a cyborg, ellipses." So he's not even sure. He says, we'll fit this new droid, -, or cyborg, -, with a restraining bolt. And it's like, well, even he doesn't know, but it's like, was that Joe Duffy, like, speculating on Boba Fett's backstory? Like, was she trying to?
Well, yeah,
because we didn't back then we didn't really know, right? Like, for sure. I mean, I know in the context of Marvel Star Wars, like, they had already said, you know, oh, they were Mandalorians, they were warriors.
Super commandos.
You know, yeah, and you had Fen Shaisha and all these guys. So it's like, conceivably, you know, you should think he's a human still, even in this continuity, but I don't know. Maybe they're just trying to spice it up by saying, oh, maybe he was in so many fights, he is a cyborg. I don't know, but I don't know. No. I just thought that was kind of weird.
Yeah, the other part of this story, which actually, I guess, my story, not intentionally, is the most Han Solo-centric So there you go for a Han Solo story. Hey, here's a Han Solo comic for you guys.
And it even has those fake funny dice that I claim don't exist.
There you go.
But, I'll be digging out my cards tomorrow.
Did you guys like the fact that this was not like Han Solo, hero of the rebellion, but Han Solo kind of down on his luck again? Because I think that's when Han Solo shines the best.
Yeah, no, that's one of the reasons I love this story, is it's the Han I love, you know? It's not, it's not Han the hero. It's, you know, it's still Han as Han Solo.
Yeah.
It's not cranky old man Harrison Ford pretending to be Han Solo.
Yeah, it's just young Han Solo. He's getting fucked over by life again, and he's trying to Han Solo his way out of it, basically.
Chewie has a lot of, I mean, I'm sure this is probably one of the more Chewie centric issues too. And it's like Chewie has some good moments in this as well. Like I like that early panel where it's Chewie and he's just chilling, like sleeping with a couple of the Ewoks, you know, because they're in the village on Endor and stuff, and he's just having a nap.
This never bothered me back then, but when I reread this, I'm asking myself, why are the rebels still on Endor?
Well, this seems like it's like the day after almost, because it's like Wedge and Lando are like waking up after they like partied hard all day.
Yeah.
It seems like Wedge is almost hungover, where he's like, dude, man, like, didn't you and I save him in the rebellion by blowing up the Death Star? You know, I feel like they just had like this rager with the Ewoks last night, and they were all like shrooming and like doing like hard Ewok liquor and all kinds of stuff. And now they're just waking up and Han's like, oh shit, I have no money. You know, like that's kind of what I feel like. Like this...
Oh, that's what Yub Nub is fucking Ewok moonshine.
Yub Nub. Yub Nub.
Oh, that's why they're doing cartwheels and shit.
Yeah.
I guess I wasn't as specific as I should have been. But yeah, this is the first story that takes right after the movie. This is our first Star Wars story post Jedi. So That is kind of cool to see the, you know, ongoing adventures of what Marvel called him for a little while. I don't know if they still called him this by this point, but the Star Warriors.
I mean, in John's defense, like, they do continue to stay on Endor for a long time for the rest of this Joe Duffy run. So, like, I'm not discounting what you're saying.
All that
kind of
stuff.
I think after this issue, you have a point. I think right now, like, you're like, well, they, you know, give them a couple days. Like, they got to get their crap together. But it's like they kind of move in. Like, they kind of. It's like Endor, you know, and the Ewok village almost becomes like their home base or something.
Yeah, we've got all these ships here. Yeah, it's too much to move them.
I like trees. Trees are cool. Yeah. That was kind of like the weird thing I got too after this issue starts. It's like, and Endor, I guess, is the rebel base now. Whatever. I don't really have too much more to say about this. I will say again that I really like the art by Palmer and Ron Frenz. Ron Frenz did a great job. Palmer like helped like, you know, ink it really well. Friends
it's interesting they say really Palmer and Mandrake, so that must be Tom Mandrake. So
yeah. The action's really good. The characters, they're not quite as Power of the Force-y. Han's more like young Harrison Ford. He's more lanky and more skinny. Hey, Leia looks beautiful. The robots look great. Yeah, everything's pretty spot on.
This is kind of like not exactly Hoth Leia, but it's like a Leia in a Hoth styled outfit where she's got the hairdo in the same way and like and those little like kind of curls from the sides. Like I think he pulled that off really well, like that look for her, like and sold it, you know, like it looks like she did in Empire.
Yeah, this is more action Leia, yeah, instead of Princess Leia. So, yeah. One thing I was going to say before we move on, though, is there's one thing that Marvel always did with Boba Fett that I always liked. I always liked Marvel's coloring because they kind of made him this dark green kind of coloring. And I don't know why, but I always preferred that over the blue that he actually is. He's kind of like a grayish blue jumpsuit and he just has green armor. But in a lot of the Marvel comics, his jumpsuit is kind of green too, and like that was the reason I bought the 2-pack. I was like, oh, that's, you know, quote unquote my Boba Fett, you know.
So was that Who is in that? It's Boba Fett, and is it Han that's in it? The two pack?
No, it's actually the purple Death Star droid.
Mm.
And that was the other reason I bought it, because I didn't know if they were going to make a figure of RA-7 from Rebels, and he's pretty much RA-7 from Rebels.
Mm. I wonder if this is like this because they were using the 12-inch Boba Fett as reference, because he's green bodied.
Huh. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it is kind of like the toy, yeah.
This was not nostalgic for me. I had heard about this issue when I was reading Marvel Comics, because actually the comic Derek is going to regale us with next had a letter column. And sorry, John, I don't agree with these fans, but the letter column, they were really giving Jawas of Doom a lot of crap, and I didn't understand why. And I thought it was a bad comic when I was a kid, just because I never read it and I saw the feedback. And then I read it and I was like, no, this is a really good issue. What, you guys are crazy, you know?
Yeah. Yep.
Just goes to show you, before the internet was still there.
Oh, yeah.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, a great adventure took place.
I'm going to regret this.
This is ridiculous.
Looking nerf herder.
Oh no.
Don't be alarmed. It's only a laser sword fight.
Star Tours announces the boarding of the Endor Express, non-stop star speeder service to the moon of Endor. All passengers, please prepare for immediate boarding.
No! Cannot get your ship out.
Lando Calrissian is a positive role model in the realm of science fiction fantasy.
Fuck Lando Calrissian!
Star Wars Monthly Mondays. Available the first Monday of every month at twotruefreaks.libsyn.com.
We would be honored if you would join us.
Well, yeah, so I'll use that as an opportunity to go into my issue. I brought Star Wars 88. I totally fucked up the Jawa Sandcrawler streak, because there are no Jawas, and there are no Sandcrawlers, and there's no Han Solo in a Star Wars Celebration podcast about a Han Solo movie that I'm not going to see. So here we go. So Star Wars 88, cover date October 1984, on sale date July 17, 1984. The cover price, like Tony's, is a whopping 60 cents. The story is titled Figurehead, and it is written again by Joe Duffy. The penciler is Bob McLeod, who I met at Heroes Con and got some cool prints from, where they were like from the New Mutants original graphic novel, a cool Swamp Thing print, and a cool Kraven's Last Hunt, because he inked Mike Zeck's work on that. So I got some cool stuff from him. The inker is Tom Palmer, and here we go. Mon Mothma, Leia Organa, and a delegation of the New Alliance of Free Planets have come to the planet Herdessa to meet with the powerful Herdessan Guild. The planet has had recent financial success, and the Alliance has come to negotiate a possible political membership. However, during the introductions, Princess Leia is greeted with a chorus of boos. While puzzling over the less than friendly welcome, Leia is hit in the face by a clump of mud. The Herdessian Guild tries to downplay the incident, claiming that the culprits are simply malcontents and that the planet's security force will apprehend them. The head of the security forces, a cyborg called Lumia, leads her forces in the pursuit. Meanwhile, the delegation makes their way to more comfortable surroundings for the negotiations. After a long meal, the Herdessian Guild members, Brylin, Toph, and Gaza, begin to attract suspicion from the Alliance members. They refuse to let the planet's citizens have a say in the diplomatic meeting. This causes the negotiations to fail, as the Guild suggests that the Alliance simply spend the day relaxing and enjoying the pleasure of the planet.
Irritated by the lack of progress, Leia excuses herself to take a walk. Outside of the guild headquarters, she witnesses Lumia apprehending the woman who threw the mud at her. The woman, called Suzu, struggles desperately against the cyborg. She claims that she and her partner, Finn, will now likely be killed as an example to anyone else who might rise up against the guild. Leia, shocked by the claims, interferes in the arrest, allowing Suzu to escape Lumia's clutches. Lumia, refusing to let her captive escape, tries to shoot down Suzu with blasters concealed in her hands. Leia attacks Lumia, smashing her to the ground to prevent her from killing an unarmed person. Leia then chases after Suzu, trying to get to the bottom of the situation. Lumia fires her blasters after Leia, but the princess escapes to find Suzu holed up in a bombed-out building with several hungry and starving Herdesians. Suzu tells Leia that only those affiliated with the guild have enjoyed the planet's prosperity, and that those outside of their power were subject to torture or a spot on the slave block. Before Leia can decide what to do about the situation, the hideout is stormed by Lumia and her security forces. The Herdesian rebels are easily beat back, falling quickly to Lumia's forces. Leia escapes the carnage, hoping to find a way to even the odds. Lumia pursues Leia through the streets, where she learns that the middle class are much too frightened to oppose the guild. Meanwhile, Mothma and the rest of the Alliance delegation are captured by the Guild, intent on selling them into slavery. The Guild has allied itself with the Galactic Empire, and Imperial stormtroopers enter the street to crack down on the uprising that has occurred after the shootout with the Herdesian rebels. Lumia uses a loudspeaker to announce to the populace to leave their homes so they can make sure that no one is harboring the princess. Leia and Suzu hide in the bushes nearby, trying to come up with a plan. Lumia then announces that if Leia is not apprehended in the next 2 minutes, she will begin executing the populace. After the 2 minutes has expired, Lumia selects Finn, Suzu's lover, from the group and prepares to kill him. Suzu, unable to let Finn die, jumps from the bushes to expose where Leia is located. The Imperial stormtroopers search the brushes, but Leia and Suzu have tricked the Imperials. Leia emerges from the opposite side of the courtyard and opens fire, quickly freeing several of the captives and arming them. The Herdesians slowly begin to push back the Imperials, and Lumia comes face to face with Leia. The princess fires a blaster bolt into the cyborg, hitting one of her power packs. The resulting explosion takes Lumia out of the fight. The momentum of the battle turns completely, and when the populace rise up, they flank the Imperial forces and capture the guild members. With the battle won and many of the Imperials in custody, Mon Mothma tells Leia it is time for the Rebel Alliance to take their leave, as they must warn the rest of the Alliance that the Empire is continuing to operate even after the Battle of Endor. Before the Alliance's departure, Leia warns Suzu and Finn that Lumia disappeared after their skirmish, and to be vigilant. A badly damaged Lumia watches from the shrubbery and vows that Princess Leia will learn what a dangerous new foe she has made. And that is Star Wars issue number 88. And just so I mean, this is like zillion-year-old spoilers, but we were talking about this earlier, but Lumia actually turns out to be Shiera Bree, who was a long-running character in Star Wars, that was she was a spy basically that was planted in the Rebel Alliance. She was this cute girl who was a fighter pilot and kind of made her bones with all the other, you know, the main cast of Rebels, and Luke really took a shining to her and everything, and then he was beating himself up for like issues on end because he thought he had accidentally like shot down a TIE fighter with her in it, and everybody was accusing Luke of like, oh, you shot down someone with friendly fire. But it was like he used the Force to tell him who was not on his side, and used that like, because they were both in TIE fighters, and like he was using the Force to say like, oh, do you have nefarious
you know, intent against me in this TIE fighter, then I can mow you down, you know, like that kind of thing. And when he came to Shiera Bree, since she was a spy working for Vader, the Force actually worked correctly, even though no one knew she was a spy, and he shot her down, and then everybody accused him of friendly fire, and then, you know, she was all, basically it turns out she is the cyborg Lumia, because she did not die after being shot down, and she was reconstructed and became like this, at least what I'd like to describe it on the cover, which I think is great, is that the cover always stood out to me, because I was like, this is like the female Darth Vader. I know that's like crazy or whatever, but I was just like, you know, it's one of those things where you look at it and it's like, Darth Vader is dead. Long live the new Dark Lord. And you're like, oh, this is cool. Like, this is, you know, a new direction to take it in since you don't have a Darth Vader. And I thought it was kind of cool that it's like Leia's the first person that sort of meets and fights her and everything. And I thought that was really neat. And so that character always kind of, I don't know. I've always had an affinity for Lumia. And then the other thing I wanted to read, which kind of I was getting at before, is it's like Marvel Age. Like, they would always have these little synopses, these little kind of, you know, promo previews that would reveal, like, you know, just kind of a basic, you know, description of the upcoming comics for Marvel. And, like, it totally spoiled. Like, they didn't even use the name Lumia. So it's kind of funny, because it's like the return of our most requested characters. From the Star Wars canon comes Shiera Bree. Shiera is Luke Skywalker's second deadliest enemy. We leave it to you to find out Luke's deadliest enemy, but only if you buy this phenomenal issue. You know, and then it's like, I think in the future write-ups, they were like, oops, sorry, we messed that up, because that was supposed to be, I guess, a surprise for later on and everything. But yeah, I guess I'll open it to you guys. Like I know, John, since you said you were hooked after 81 and that was your big comeback, I assume you read this when it came out on the stand. So what did you think of this issue?
Well, I could tell you, I remember reading it whenever I saw the mud on her face, when they threw the mud on her face. Okay. I was like, okay, I know which issue this is now. It took me a minute to get back to it. But when I read this originally, I thought she was a droid. I did not think she was a cyborg. And I don't know why. I just always thought she was a droid. And it wasn't until they show her face a couple issues later that I realized she wasn't. So I wasn't reading Marvel Age, so I really had no idea, you know?
You had a Jawa moment. You're like, robot, person, robot.
Do you have the two-pack for this, the comic two-pack, John?
I don't, and I wish I did. I really wish I did, because I never saw it in person. I think that's the reason I never got it.
It's interesting, because that's kind of like her later look, where it's like they never really made a figure of this look. Like, and I kind of like, I don't know if I'm in the minority or whatever. Like, I don't know who decided what look for Lumia to pick for those two pack figures, but like if I had my dithers, you know, I would have picked this look, this kind of female Darth Vader look. But I guess they went with the kind of where she has like that kind of electro whip, and she kind of has almost like this weird kind of, it's like a, I don't know, like a pyramid turban or something, and the she's got the face mask and everything, and like, you know, so like, I mean, that's an interesting look as well. But I think if anything, just the callback to having a female Vader, like, I kind of prefer this look. But I know that's the action figure they went with was from that later appearance. I think in what, like, issue 92? I don't know.
Yeah, it's the one where he fights her, I think, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's the one came with it. Yeah, because she came with Luke.
Yeah, because wasn't that the Luke that had like the short, or the no sleeve Luke or whatever, like that kind of, and he was doing that cool, I always liked that in the later issues, where he had like the short saber and the long saber. I thought that was kind of cool.
Well, he develops that to fight her because she has that whip, and he can't
overcome combat it with the one saber. Yeah.
Yeah.
He need a shield, basically, more or less. Yeah. I always liked Lumia's original design too, Derek, because it was kind of minimalist, because she just had this kind of blank mask and just these eyes. And she had that kind of weird, I guess, as opposed to accentuate that she was feminine, kind of like, you know, plastic hair, you know, the two big cones on her head. But it was very simple design, but I thought it was really effective. She looked evil, like a Dark Lord and stuff. The whips and stuff were kind of cool, but I just liked her hand blasters in this. She was just, you know, shooting these powerful beams of energy at Leia, and it was like, yeah, that's badass, you know. As far as Leia, like, this is a kind of cool thing, because they do develop the fact that it is She-Ra Bree, and, you know, she is more of a Luke villain at that point. But it was kind of cool that this was like Leia's Vader, at least for this issue.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good Leia her issue, for sure. You know, I mean, she really is that rebel leader in this issue. And a couple issues later is an episode called, I think, The Choice, where they have a cover where it's either she's the rebel leader or the politician. And you can see in this issue, even, she doesn't really want to be the politician. She wants to be, you know, where the action is.
She wants to be General Leia. Yeah.
Yeah.
General Organa. Yeah. And it was also kind of cool that, like, she doesn't really use any force powers. She's using her rebel training. She's a tactician in this. She's basically using, you know, her military mindset in this.
I think my favorite, you're talking about Leia kind of being, you know, more into being the rebel, you know, being into the rebellion and everything. Like, I really like that it's a two-page spread, but there's obviously, like, panels beneath the big spread. But I really, really dig when all those, you know, commandos of Lumias, like, bust through, like, that little rebel encampment, and it's like maybe a few rebels get off a shot, but like most of them are getting mowed down, and you can see like Leia kind of directing everybody in the background and kind of chastising, you know, Lumia and all the men coming through and everything. It's very like it has the dynamism of like a Jack Kirby two-page spread, I think, and I really, really dig it, like the way everybody's kind of coming through, and then the first guy gets hit in the head, but like all these other guys are getting clipped and taken out and everything. I really, really like it.
One thing you pointed out early in the synopsis was Leia getting hit by the clump of mud and everything. And was it kind of interesting to see people who were rebels basically at heart? They were, you know, rebelling against the Imperial ties that they were trying to build with the Herdesians, but they didn't trust Leia. I thought that was kind of a cool thing. It was like they were rebels themselves, but they had gotten to the point where they didn't trust anybody really.
Well, I think it's also Leia realizing, oh, I'm now part of the government and I'm the problem now, you know?
Yeah, totally. And like, and she of course does due diligence and establishing trust with those guys, and like, you know, like, hey, no, I'm on your side, you know, like I'm, you know, like, well, I mean, the title of the issue is Figurehead. So yeah, Leia's seen now as a part of, you know, quote unquote, the man, you know, and she has to rectify that and show that she is still herself fighting for freedom, quote unquote, you know, fighting for freedom wherever there's trouble.
Princess Leia's there.
What do you guys think of the backup characters, the not rebels like Finn and all them and stuff?
I was like, there's a Finn before Finn.
Right? And he's more interesting.
Obviously, it didn't at the time, but the whole setup for this world reminds me of the Firefly episode where they're in land on that planet and they got to fight that whole battle with the rich guy, and they're in It kind of reminds me of that a little bit, where you got, you know, people being put down and having to fight a battle against them.
Yeah.
Because they felt more like, you know, Battlestar Galactica villains than they did Star Wars villains to me. But
it's weird because, like, the other thing I was noticing, like, besides the character Finn having a common name with a later Star Wars character that was going to be introduced, like, of those three kind of, you know, I guess, hoity-toity, you know, officials that are basically exploiting the people and everything, like the one bald guy with the white beard, his name is Toph. But then, like, all I could think of was later in this run, there's that race called the Toffs. Like, so it's just kind of like, it's weird, yeah, how they kind of recycled that later for something else. And I'm like, I'm sure there's no inherent connection, but I'm just like, oh, like Toph must have just been something on Joe Duffy's mind. So it's like this one guy is named Toph, but then later, you know, that race that they're fighting against, you know, that becomes one of the main antagonists for the Rebel Alliance, like post Return of the Jedi, are the Toffs too. So like that was something that stood out to me that I was thinking about. And then I guess like
Joe Duffy really likes toffee.
she likes toffee. Like the only other thing I was trying to figure out is, and I know she's got problems with them, but like I thought that one moment where like those guys almost like offer, it's like they're trying to basically like say, hey, you guys can kick back, you and Mon Mothma can sit here and get like, you know, Zeltron boys to like pleasure you or whatever. And like there's that weird panel where like Leia like totally freaks out, is like, no Zeltrons, and like Mon Mothma's got that weird like question mark in her thought bubble, like, and it's like I guess I kind of understand some of the context of it, where, you know, like she's dealt with Zeltrons before and it's always been a pain in the ass, but like I don't know, it's like it's funny that like that even goes down at all. Like it's an odd moment, and it never gets like addressed, you know, like it's just there, you know, like it seems like a funny thing to put in the story and then completely drop from it, you know, like.
Yeah, because the only reason she didn't really like Zeltrons was because Danny was hitting on Luke, but that was before she was with Han and before she knew that Luke was her brother, and my brain hurts.
But it also sets them up, because the Zeltrons kind of come back into it.
Yeah, yeah.
In the upcoming issue, so it might just be planting seeds for that.
Planting seeds for that, so like that when they show up and she's kind of got a chip on her shoulder, you've been reminded of it in this issue. Yeah, I guess that makes sense. Yeah, it just seems it's not so much that like I know this is gonna sound funny, but it's like I don't care if Leia's like, you know, I hate fucking Zeltrons, like, you know, like Zeltrons are like Nazis, I hate Nazis or whatever, like that doesn't bother me. But I guess what bothers me is like Mon Mothma's like, why do you hate Nazis, you know, like she's got this bewildered look on her face, and I'm like, were you not like one of the fucking leaders of the rebellion? Like, you didn't get the memo on the fucking Zeltron adventures? Like, what? Like, I don't know, like I was just kind of confused by that, like, you know, I'm like, Mon Mothma, go read some fucking files, man. Go read on that report that Leia submitted on your desk, like, you know.
Do you even history, bro?
the way I kind of interpreted that was, Mon Mothma in this is playing the dead on politician, make everybody happy. I just gotta come out of here with a deal, you know, Captain Picard,
yeah,
you know, role, and. You know, she was kind of like, Leia, you're offending these people and making position harder.
You're making a scene. Like, why are you making a scene? Yeah, yeah, yeah. I get it.
Yeah, quit morphing this up. Yeah. I was going to ask you, Derek, and of course, John, but I mean, mainly Derek, because he picked this issue. Me and John's issues, as you had stated many times, were expanding upon the universe that we had already seen. Like, you know, Tatooine, Jawas, you know, the lore we had already encountered. Your issue is totally new stuff. We have the Herdesians, we have Lumia, we have Leia post the war. Even though my issue took place after Return of the Jedi, this is, you know, Leia in kind of a new role in the New Republic. So like my question was, is like, you know, did that excite you as well? Like just all this new stuff, you know, like not stuff we've seen before. We never heard of the Herdesians. We never seen Lumia. I mean, we knew who Shira Bree unfortunately was, but like this was a new villain and everything, you know, like did the newness really grab you?
I think so. Like I remember being fascinated by this run, you know, like these latter issues, like I think maybe just because of the novelty of like the fact that in our minds, like, I mean, you have to get into the headset of like people that were our age in 1983 when Return of the Jedi came out, and then it was like, oh, you know, Star Wars is over, you know, so it was it was like, oh, that's kind of ended. So I kind of have the same level of fascination and wonderment that I do towards this run, like, you know, say the 80s until 107, you know, that whole Joe Duffy run. And the same way I do to, like, stuff like the Droids cartoon or even the Ewoks cartoon. And I know some people don't look on those as very favorable, but it was just, like, one of those things where I was like, but what? Like, there's more? Like even more after? Like, I get the fact that people were, like, excited that there were other adventures for Star Wars during the movies and that, like, the issues that you and John brought, or I guess mainly the issue that John brought, would be between, you know, Star Wars and Empire, and it served to fill the need and the want for more Star Wars between those two movies. But it's almost like one of those things where you felt like, oh, well, yeah, duh, between the movies, you're going to get a bunch of adventures. But it's like one of those things that's like, can this really support more story once the story is quote unquote finished?
Does this thing have legs?
Yeah. Like, yeah, you're like wondering, like, is there more story to tell? And then when you see stuff like this or read stuff like this, you know, then you're kind of like, oh wow, this is kind of neat. Like, I didn't know what they were exactly gonna do, and it was kind of, you know, to me it was kind of neat that they had all these different races. I mean, I know, you know, Tony kind of regaled us with the whole, you know, Nagai, you know, being like the Go Nagai homage and everything, but it's like, you know, you had, you know, the guy Knife, you know, with the Nagai, and then you had the Zeltrons, and you have the Toffs, and you've got, you know, Bay, who was like one of those, like, Carillion dudes or whatever, you know, and stuff. So you, like, had all these different aspects, and then you had, like, this, you know, that's why I think, like, these comics almost tie better into The Force Awakens timeline than the Expanded Universe ever did, because you've got, like, these remnants of the Empire, like, specifically in this issue that are coming back, and you're, like, sitting there going, oh, I wonder if those ragtag bunch of stormtroopers, you know, could become the First Order, you know, like, those kind of things where you've got, you know, all these other troopers and stuff like that, and I mean, you know, I guess the answer to your question is, did that excite me? Like, I think as a kid it did. Like, I was always kind of interested in what came after, you know, because I was always kind of surprised that there was an after, you know, like, I guess, you know.
I didn't want an after, you know, that's why I wanted to keep it going as long as I could. I know that's why I was reading at the time.
Yeah, I actually had this issue too. Out of all the issues we've talked about tonight, I actually did get this issue off a spinner rack. It excited me too, because that cover, even though, like, despite the art being great, you know, it just says Darth Vader is dead. Long live the new Dark Lord. And I'm like, the what? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that cover, like, totally sold me, you know, like, where you were just kind of awestruck that was even a thing, that it was happening.
There's actually a neat callback on that cover too, because that's actually her dress and hair from the medallion ceremony.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Big props to Bob McLeod for really beautiful detailed artwork. I noticed that when I read it as a kid. I didn't have, like, my adult, you know, picadillos as far as favorite artists and stuff. But when I was reading this as a kid, I remember being like, man, this looks, like, you know, so photorealistic. The art is really good.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I definitely concur and agree. And I think it really makes the issue, like, you know, memorable and spectacular.
And that's the only thing that's sad about these Marvel issues. And you had alluded to this earlier, Derek, and it is a problem with the Expanding Universe. There's so many cool concepts that they introduced that, like, never get touched on again in, like, the Disney era, I guess you would say. It's not even Lumia. It's, like, different planets that they introduced, different, you know, races. And yeah, I would love to see Lumia again, or even just She-Ra Bree. But, like, yeah, I mean, yeah, it's just, like, crazy that it's just, like, this well of stuff they could draw from, and they don't really take advantage of it like they should.
Well, you know me, I had all these, like, weird fan theories, and to me, like, She-Ra Bree is kind of, like, the proto Mara Jade. I mean, you've got all these people that are like totally. Butthurt, you know, they're all butthurt that the expanded universe doesn't exist anymore. So it's like that, you know, I guess means that, you know, Mara Jade and Luke never got married and all this other stuff. But it's like, you could kind of see, like, I remember when people would bring up that relationship, I would always kind of go, well, if you want to get really old school, you know, you go back to Shira Bree and Luke Skywalker, you know, having a thing and then her sort of turning evils and being like his deadliest adversary and everything like that. So that's something I would point to. And then of course I said this way back on the podcast probably, so I'm sure it's recorded somewhere, but I remember having these like fanboy like dreams that didn't make any sense where I was like, dude, they need to make Snips into like the new Lumia, because like since Anakin went bad, his Padawan needs to go bad too or whatever, and they could totally retcon that shit and you know, make Snips Lumia or whatever, you know, which obviously is not going to happen, but I was like, that'd be so fucking cool, you know. It's like, I'm Snips, the new Dark Lord, you know. I was like, what, you know. But that was another little fanboy thing in my head. So
Well, I think that's the thing about Marvel Comics, that's why people look back on them so fondly for their Star Wars run, the original Star Wars run. It's like the expanded universe is really entertaining. I'm not one of those people who's butthurt that is quote-unquote legends now. But, like, you know, you had the Dark Horse stuff, you had Dark Empire, you had, like, all the books, you had, like, the New Jedi Order, all that stuff. That's fine. If you enjoy that stuff, I have no problem with it. I enjoyed a lot of it myself. But these Marvel books, they really did have a really strong sense of imagination. And even like the in-between issues, like John's, you know, they were willing to go into that universe and do new stories. Because, I mean, really, when you like saw Star Wars, did you really think that Han Solo and Luke would be buddying up with the Jawas to escape the Empire? No, but that was so like fresh and like, you know, in the Star Wars universe, like you said, Derek, that it was like, I never would have thought of that. That's really cool. And I think that's the appeal of these Marvel comics. They did stuff like that. Whereas I would hate to say this, a lot of the expanded universe stuff, even the good stuff, even stuff I do like, seems more like fan fiction or fan wankery even back then. And these Marvel stories were just solid stories. I mean, I know that sounds kind of pretentious, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I get it.
Yeah. I don't know. I like the Han Solo books, the ones that came out around that same time period, too.
Star's End.
Yeah. Because I think they fit in the same vein. You know, they're more prequel, but they fit in the same vein.
Yeah, yeah. But, like Splinters of the Mind Eye is considered a really great Star Wars book, yeah.
And maybe because of that, back then you didn't think about canon and not canon. It was just, hey, this is a story and,
right,
you know.
Right,
this is Star Wars, yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. I try not to get too wrapped up in that and
that's probably the best attitude to have. It's like you enjoy what you enjoy, right? Like you know.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like I said, the expanded universe stuff is not bad, but there is some stuff that I could do without. But that's just what I don't like. And there is some stuff I do like. People who like everything in the expanded universe, more power to you. Yeah.
Yeah, I never saw, like, when I pick up a Star Wars book to read it, you know, a novel, I never see it as necessary. I tend not to pick up the series ones. I pick up like the one-offs. So I never really see them as like part of a continuity. You know, it's almost like a what-if story to me, or, you know, those kind of things.
A Star Wars story?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's just a story, a novel in that universe. And, you know, just like there's different versions of Batman, I see there being different versions of Star Wars. And that's just kind of how it lives in my head.
Yeah, there was a series that came out. It wasn't really a series, but it had the same moniker. It was like Tales from Mos Eisley, Tales of the Bounty Hunters.
Oh, that, yeah, those are awesome books.
Those are great. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, I never took them as canon either. I just was like, oh, this is just expanding upon these characters I saw for like 10 seconds in a movie. And that's cool. You know, I like that, you know.
Well, yeah, I remember being drawn to, again, you know, desperate to find out, like, what is the deal with Boba Fett, you know, like you know. And it's like reading that, you know, obviously once the prequel movies came out, that little Boba Fett chapter had no relevance in, you know, as far as Lucasfilm was concerned. But I remember at the time poring over that and going, oh, weird, like, like Boba Fett's in the room with like Slave Leia and he's like unmasking and all that kind of stuff. And I was like, why is he checking out Slave Leia? Like, what's up with that?
And, like, he's being like civil and stuff.
Yeah. And like, what's going on here and stuff like that. And then, you know, of course that I think further accentuates why I was like, why do Jawas think Boba Fett's a droid? Cause you've got like IG-88 who's like in the Death Star when it blows up, like all that crazy stuff, you know? Like,
so, Yeah. Well, like Zuckuss is like a mind reader and stuff or whatever.
But well, vintage Zuckuss, we'll say, was he a droid? Yeah. Was he a bug? Who knows?
Right.
Forlom is a droid and Zuckuss is red.
In 1977, the world changed. The film industry was transformed. The popular culture rocked. And young minds forever altered. Star Wars arrived. And nothing would ever be the same again. Though everyone wasn't affected in the same way, everyone was affected. This is my Star Wars story. My Star Wars Story, monthly at mystarwarsstory.com.
And then speaking of that, let's all tie it back as we wrap up and sign off. But do you think that in Solo, A Star Wars Story, that we're going to get to see some Dengar and Han Solo swoop bike races that reveal how Dengar got all that toilet paper on his head?
You know what? For the longest time, Dengar has been considered the shittiest bounty hunter by a lot of people. Because the Empire Strikes Back, the actor did look a little dumpy and frumpy, and he didn't have the coolest outfit and all that stuff. But like you guys said, I read the Expanded Universe stuff, and like, yeah, I know about the swoop race, and Dengar's ship was called the Punishing One, which, I'm sorry, that's a badass name. And his nickname was Payback, and I'm like, that Dengar's kind of cool. I kind of want to know more about him. So will it happen? I don't know, but dude, I'd be totally down if like there was like a 10-minute scene where it's like, you know, Solo, and he's like, yeah, I'm in the swoop race. The only guy I gotta watch out for is this Dengar guy. He's apparently really good. And then something terrible happens, and, you know, Dengar gets fucked up, and he has to, like, get, you know, all the cyborg implants. Yeah, I'd be totally down for that. That'd be cool.
Dude, what if Woody Harrelson is Dengar?
Oh, shit, mind blown.
Oh, I'm not going to sleep tonight now.
All right. I will say this, though, before we log off.
Okay.
I do love Boba Fett. I'm a big fan of that character. I know he's got a lot of fan ore, a lot of fan wankery for him. Don't care. Always been a fan. Fan of the Fett, I guess you would say. However, in Solo, A Star Wars Story, please don't give me a needless cameo of Boba Fett. Don't have him just show up and look at the camera and nod like he did in like the special edition. I don't need that.
What if he comes on and like strokes Mother of Dragon's chin and then walks off screen? Like, what if
well, how old would he be then, though?
Well,
although he's a clone, so he's growing faster, isn't he?
No. Actually, in Attack of the Clones, they say that they gave Jango
Yeah, that's right. He's not. So he should be grown at a regular rate. So
what was he in Attack of the Clones? He's what, like 11, 10?
Yeah, 10, 11. That's what I was thinking.
So, I would say Clone Wars, he's like 14, 15. Yeah.
So then, yeah, but I don't care about Clone Wars per se. I'm just thinking, like, say he's 11, right? Maybe by episode 3, he's 12 or whatever, right? Fine. Like, then what, Luke and Leia, 17, 18, right? So
yeah.
Then that would make him what, like 20, like around 30, right? Like, ish.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, he's roughly Han Solo's age.
That's about, yeah. So, I mean, I guess if in a Solo story where whenever that's set, I would imagine he'd be of similar age to Han Solo.
So like maybe 20, mid 20, 25,
something like that.
Now, what I wouldn't mind, and this would be actually be kind of nice, is, you know, like an offhand remark, like, you know, like, Solo, you better watch out. You keep going this route, you're going to get somebody on your tail. Like, oh, yeah, like who? Like, there's this kid named Boba Fett who's been making waves in the bounty hunter circuit. You know, that'd be kind of cool, you know? This would be a good time for Boba Fett to be making his rep, just like Han Solo.
There's this dude with big lips named Greedo who's been making his rounds.
I was just going to say that. I'd like to see Greedo if I saw anybody as a cameo. Nice.
You know what? I actually would not want to see Boba Fett, but Greedo would be kind of cool because in the first movie, it is established that Greedo knows Han Solo. They met before.
Yeah. Maybe they did some stuff on the casino planet, and then we can go back there. Oh boy.
Yeah, we can find out what happened to Greedo after he tried to beat up Anakin. Deep cuts.
All right. So
and maybe Broom Kid.
Broom Kid. And Broom Kid. I hope Broom Kid is in Han Solo's Star Wars story.
He'd be conceived in that, probably.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe Mother of Dragons gives birth to him, and he's Han Solo's illegitimate, like, force baby. Come on. We've got to think here. All right. So
there is
no
father.
it's just a broom who's like a talking broom who's like, I don't know, I was pregnant, I conceived it. He's Broom Jesus.
All right, we gotta go. We gotta wrap this up. This has been an episode of Fanholes Comics. Motherfucker, do you read them? We hope you have enjoyed listening to this episode. And I just want to briefly turn it over to John, who has been our special guest. Very gracious. It took us a billion times before we could officially schedule this, and we were actually all here on the same page. So we can't say thank you enough to John. And John, where can people find you out there on the interwebs if they want to get some more of your dulcet tones?
Well, you can find me at the Action Figure Blues podcast, although I haven't been on as much, but hopefully we'll be changing that here pretty soon.
Yay!
You can find us at actionfigureblues.com. Also, you can find me on Twitter at EngineerNerd and at TVandFilmToys.com.
Cool.
So, come to any of those places. And
yeah, you should check it out. It's good stuff. It's all good stuff.
Yeah, I got some figure arts I want to review here coming up. So
cool. Nice. Very cool. So yeah, so and then I guess that will do it for tonight's episode. If you want to listen to any of the backlog of our episodes, they're over on the blogspot, fanholespodcast.blogspot.com. If you have any questions and or concerns, you can email us at fanholespodcast@gmail.com. Of course, Comics Motherfucker, Do You Read Them is not the only Fanholes spinoff show. We've got Mobile Suit Mondays, Transformers Tuesdays, Toku Thursdays, Sentai Saturdays. We've got Big in Japan, where we talk about anime. We've got Justice, Not Entirely Dissimilar to Lightning, a Thunderbolts podcast. And of course, the Fanholes podcast proper. We're on all kinds of social media, Tumblr, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. We can be streamed on Stitcher Radio. We are on iTunes. And until the next time, this is going to be Derek WC, signing off.
Hey guys, this is Tony and Utini.
This is John saying, I was played by a cyborg tonight.
This initial one in Marvel Age 16, it's like
From Star Wars canon comes Shira Bree. Shira is Luke Skywalker's second deadliest enemy. You know, and it's just like, I think you kind of fucked that up, dude. You know, like, you spoiled it.
These restraining bolts chafe.
Yeah, how does that work? How does a restraining bolt work on Boba Fett?
They put it right on his nipple.
It's like, yeah. Ow! Mother of Dragons is not interested in your gold fuzzy dice that don't exist. You gotta show me that card, dude. Like,
I'm gonna look tomorrow.
Okay. Derek has not been like obsessed with it, but anytime it does come up, he's not buying it.
I get angry for no apparent reason, but yeah, that's
fine. Oh man,
my problem is I don't know if I read it somewhere or if I actually saw it. You know, it's in that kind of space.
Yeah, I don't know. I tried looking it up and like I don't buy what they're selling so far, but. If you show me one of those trading cards like with the snow speeder in outer space, like all and it's like the gold fuzzy dice, I'll be like, oh, okay, fine. Like
I'm willing to admit it could be the mandala effect where you remember something and you know it happened, but it never did. Mm.
It might be an Empire Strikes Back poster.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Hmm.
Is it like a painted poster?
Or yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'll do some research. I got an idea.
Okay.
Now.
Okay.
Engineer nerd is on the job.
He's on the case, man.
Which means you'll get an answer in, you know, 1 day to 3 months.
we have a strong turnaround time.
I'll be sitting there at work one day and I'll be like, oh crap, I'm supposed to research that, you know, be supposed you're to like, be on a like, conference four... call.
You're like 30 to 90 business days, sort of, kind of, maybe.
It's like shipping from Japan.
Yeah. Well, it took a month to get this show together, so I mean.
It's like, dude, like that Sal shipping on those gold fuzzy dice ain't getting us anywhere.
What's going on here?
Yeah, I've ordered from Hobby Link over there, and I've got stuff in a week, and then sometimes it's taken three. Mm. It's just weird.
I guess I overpay, but I always do the EMS and it always usually comes really quickly, so
no, I'm a cheap bastard.
Yeah.
So
you usually just do Mandaraki though, right, Derek?
Usually, but I Justin kept sending me links to like Hobby Link Japan and a bunch of other stuff. So I bought like for Christmas when I bought a lot of those figure arts, like the Spectre and the Ghost were in that Mandaraki Delta. Yeah. They were on sale for the holiday sale, so I bought a bunch of stuff from them then, and I used it once or twice, but like yeah, I do usually hit up Mandarake mostly. Yeah, occasionally yeah. I get stuff from AmiAmi too.
Yeah,
I ordered from Gundam Planet here in the States this week, and they said, oh, we'll send you an email. This was Wednesday. We'll send you an email with the shipping information. I didn't get the email, and I was like looking at my phone today. I'm like, oh, I should. You know, maybe send them an email. And then I hear a knock on the door, and the box is sitting on the door.
Were you getting Pat Labor stuff? Or what
yeah,
were you getting?
Yeah. Okay. And I'm in over my head on this one.
Oh, okay. Well, then, you know, there's worse things to go down the rabbit hole with. Like well, that, you know.
Because I got a kit. I didn't get a figure.
Okay. But is it like a snap-on, or do you have to paint it, or what's the deal?
Yeah, you could probably get away with not painting it. I ordered some like lining markers with it too.
Oh, okay.
But the figures aren't painted, so. But well, this
the Alphonse is pretty much just white anyway, though.
Yeah, I don't know about that, because like the little sleeves in between are gray, but they're actually made out of rubber, so you can pose it.
Okay.
And it covers them up, and it's got like a lot of panels behind, like inner workings behind panels, and stuff that you can see through panels, and the cockpit opens up, and yeah, because it's not like the other one I did was a hobby grade. This is a master grade, an MG.
Oh, okay.
So Yeah.
Is that kind of like the high grade for Gundam?
It's one of them. I don't know that it's the highest, but I opened the box and there's like 14 sprues in it, and I'm like, holy crap, you know?
Yeah, I think the worst one for Gundam is Perfect Grade, I think.
Yeah.
That's the like the $300, $400 like Beta Gundam, yeah.
Worst is relative, but to some people it might be the bee's knees, right?
When I was going through the box and saw a little bag in there with like metal screws in it and nuts, I was like, what the hell's that?
What have I done?
Yeah.
Yeah, when you actually have metal parts to add stability, yeah, you've gone into a rabbit hole.
Yeah.